The Hail Varsity Radio Saturday Morning Show, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Strap yourselves in. Here are your hosts, Chris Schmidt.
Y'all don't even know he was a virgin until he's 28, and now, roll tide.
And Mark Kranak.
Time has come for someone to put his foot down. And that foot is me.
Rise and Shine, Saturday edition, Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, Mark Kranak, TJ Henning. Going to be a glorious Saturday. Nebraska, a chance to move to, say it with me, 7-0.
7-0.
7-0. Good morning, Kranak. What do you know?
I'm saying it with you, man. That's what I'm doing. What do you know?
I know that, you know what, hurry up and wait is my feeling. Hurry up and wait. Remember those car rides as a kid? You're on the vacation with mom and dad or grandma and grandpa, and it's Denver or Kansas City or maybe Chicago. Yeah. For me, it was Yellowstone because it took, I don't know, 17 years to get there. Yep. Almost there, almost there. One more mountain turn, but it was worth it. And as much as, you know, Purdue is in town, that's the game, that's the focus today, and Coach Riley's preached that all week, hurry up and wait. Bring me Wisconsin.
Oh, I know. It's so hard.
Get me to Columbus.
Yep.
Because that's going to be kind of your proving ground. And this isn't into the, well, are they number 10 or number 8? Listen, the Hail Varsity .com poll. And if you haven't been to the new Hail Varsity site, you're missing out. It is phenomenal. It is gorgeous. It's a community for you, the Nebraska fan. Specifically, you can jump on the message board, say what's up, rattle off your thoughts. It's all good. Now, the poll out there that's been ongoing for the week, it's kind of like the three bears. Too high, too low, just right when it comes to Nebraska's ranking. 49% say too high, 49% say too low, and then there's the 2% that say, well, you know, just right. So 40, 49, 49, and 2. You don't know as a Nebraska fan.
Yeah.
You don't know what to think. You just know that you're happy. Back to the mantra, 7-0. You're just extremely excited that Nebraska is where they're at. Take care of business today. We'll dive into Purdue for a little bit, but
not too much, please. Well, not too much.
Here's what we're going to do.
Nobody benefits from knowing more about Purdue.
Well, the other
nobody benefits from that.
The other side of that is the intrigue with their coaching situation. And the rewind that'll come up at 7:25 is their play-by-play man, Tim Newton. He is gold. He's gold and black. He's a great dude. And he touches on the coaching options, doesn't dive too deep into them, but acknowledges them and talks about how you win at Purdue, because it does affect you as a Nebraska fan. Is Purdue going to be Northwestern caliber or Iowa caliber when they're up? I mean, Iowa was extreme last year with the 12-0 mark, right? But are they going to be one of those 7-5 teams, 7-6 teams that sting somebody? Purdue's been good at that level. You're not too far removed from them being Rose Bowl or Capital One Bowl or something that's gone into upset teams from time to time. They've had that ability with the right coach and right quarterback. So you'll play them every year. Who are you going to be playing? What type of team are you facing? Are they the proverbial Kansas or Iowa State where you just chalk up a win? Or are they going to be a little better and a little more dangerous? That's their next move. But with Nebraska, Kranak, it's hurry up and wait, my friend. It's Wisconsin. Very anxious to see Iowa, Wisconsin, what happens there. Ohio State, another tough road game for them at Penn State tonight. They look Terminator-esque, where they just won't and can't die. They're that good. And then there's Nebraska that needs to handle their business. But, you know, a week from today, I will have ribs and wings on the smoker. And we'll be doing the show getting ready for the 6 o'clock kickoff here on Hail Varsity. And then you have Ohio State. And really, that's what you're looking forward to if you're a Nebraska fan, kind of the season in thirds, right? Oregon and Northwestern, how did those shake out? Those shook out pretty well. Now your next test and hurdle is what do you do with Wisconsin? What do you do with Ohio State? And then you get into the Iowa showdown, assuming you handle business with the Maryland's, with the Minnesota's, on the back portion of the schedule.
How and you all feel- of those road games, of course.
Right.
All of those on the road.
Minnesota and Maryland.
Well, I mean the three big ones.
Yeah, the three big ones. And, let's start there. Concern level with this team when it comes to them being road warriors. And while the games last weekend wasn't pretty, it was effective. It was a win. Northwestern wasn't pretty, but it was effective. It was a win. And as Nebraska gets better, as Nebraska continues to progress as a team, the hope is you'll see less ugly football. But if it's going to be ugly, it might be beautiful in your eyes because it's your type of ugly. It's a win. The biggest factor moving forward with Nebraska's success, I don't doubt their confidence. I don't doubt their scheme right now. I don't doubt how fast and how well they're playing on defense against decent competition. And I chalk up Northwestern and I chalk up Indiana to good to decent competition. Oregon, no idea. I have no clue. Okay, whatever. They lost in overtime again last night. I know that their speed and if they weren't so screwed up mentally, they'd probably be a bowl team. There's enough talent there for Oregon to do so. It's far gone and lost right now. The biggest factor and criteria right now is injuries, Mark, moving forward with how you feel a week from today and 2 weeks from today. And we won't know till after the Purdue ball game and the week that follows how healthy Nebraska can get on the offensive line. If they get well, if they get right, then anything's possible. And I say that with a little asterisk next to Ohio State because I just think Ohio State's too Bama-like to you need to just go play well if you're Nebraska. But Wisconsin, listen, it's not out of the realm. I think the line's 6.5. Nebraska's a dog at Wisconsin. At least that's what was kind of floated out there. The line's 21 against Ohio State. You split those two games and you don't get whacked too bad against Ohio State. Hey, not only the nation, but Nebraska fans will know a heck of a lot more about their team.
Look, am I the only one, though? To me, that's almost reversed. I'm actually more concerned about Wisconsin than I am Ohio State. After watching Ohio State the past couple weeks and after watching Wisconsin against really good teams, including Ohio State the past couple weeks, it's just there's something about the way Wisconsin plays that I haven't seen. I don't know. I think Nebraska has some guys. Look, Wisconsin is Nebraska from decades ago. By far the most physical team, save for maybe Alabama. Michigan is starting to play a little bit like that too, though. Is Nebraska tough enough? Do you know what I mean? Like, is because
can you go four quarters with a bar fight against Wisconsin? Is your question?
Who has waxed Nebraska more so than Wisconsin consistently?
That's been the boogeyman for them.
Right, who's the one that? Yeah, right. Who's the team that's body slammed Taylor Martinez and Nebraska just lets that happen? You know what I'm saying? Like the way Wisconsin plays, the manner in which they play, they sort of have like a physically a BYU roster.
Good you size know, and speed. Yeah.
Older guys, thick. You don't see a lot of projects on the field. You know what I mean? You're not seeing the guy that's like the 175 pound walk on that. If they just put some weight on him, no, all those dudes have weight on them already.
You're getting them by the time they've all grown up.
They're physically mature, and they just piss pound you all game. They fight. They hit every single play. And it just keeps coming, right? Just keeps coming, keeps coming, keeps coming. So are you, and it sounds strange, so they're one of the more physical teams. So, but it's mental when you play them. It's mental. Are you ready for that trauma? Right? Are you going to match that trauma?
Here, let me say something. You brought up both factors that make Wisconsin that tough hurdle: their physicality and the history, the mental part. And I'll say, from a physical standpoint, Nebraska was there a year ago and hung in with Wisconsin. I mean, Nebraska was kind of Nebraska throwback against Wisconsin in that second half, and I think of Janovich's score. They got some yards up the middle when they needed it. Now, they couldn't get the yards necessary to close out the game. They weren't tough enough to get those short yardage runs, to get those third down conversions on third down and second, third down and three. And Gaglione got that field goal, got a stay of execution for the winner at 4 seconds left. Wisconsin a year ago couldn't run the ball. It was Stave chucking it around. There was a couple of runs, obviously, that Wisconsin busted in the second half.
Kinda but now they can run it a little bit.
Now they can run it. Now their offensive line's physical. Corey Clement's healthy for the first time in 2 years.
And did you see the attitude that he was running with?
Yeah,
I'm not a huge Clement fan, but that whole cell phone, flip phone comment, whatever.
Right. He's an angry dude, though, in a good way for a back.
Right. I mean, that dude was running defiantly against Ohio State. What I've seen from Ohio State now, think about how Indiana put a little bit of a scare into him. Wisconsin definitely did. Ohio State is not nearly as bulletproof as they're being made out to be right now. In fact, I think Michigan is a much scarier opponent than Ohio State. Ohio State's got talent to burn. Mm-hmm. They're scary in that way. You better be on point. You better be tackling in the open field. But if you saw what Nebraska did at Indiana,
sure.
Brandon Vogel uncovered that incredible stat about solo tackles, where something like it was 82% of the tackles in that game were
52
solo
of the 64 or something like that. Yeah.
It was like 82. Yeah. It was like 82% of the tackles were solo tackles, whereas a normal game's closer to like 50-50. And what that tells you is, so that could be a bad thing, right? Like the fact that you have a bunch of solo tackles isn't necessarily a good thing all the time. But they actually made a lot of those tackles and prevented a lot of scores. That's the thing. Like, because you could have 82% solo tackles and lose by 30, right? Mm-hmm. So it's not an indicator necessarily of winning. But what it tells you, though, is Indiana got Nebraska in space, but couldn't capitalize. And we all know that. If you just think back to the game, like, you realize that Nebraska tackled really, really well in that game. Granted, that was Indiana athletes. But if you
Indiana athletes that if they don't shoot themselves in the foot or within a score going into the fourth quarter against Ohio State.
Right. But think about that. You're right. And you can carry that forward to Ohio State if Nebraska tackles like that. Because that's the concern with Ohio State, right? It's like, you're going to make those one-on-one tackles because they have great athletes and they get them in space. Are you going to be able to make those tackles? Again, a lot better athletes than in Indiana, but that's a good sign. How now carry that forward to Wisconsin. You got these pretty young pups on the defensive line overall.
Mm-hmm.
And they're about to go up against their stiffest challenge yet by far. By far. Are they ready for four quarters of that?
You know what? I think they will be. They need to be healthy. It needs to be complementary football where the offense and defense are helping each other. And you saw that in parts against Indiana. You really saw it against Oregon. And that's where you have the offense stepping up, getting some points, kind of rescuing the defense so they're not on the field the whole time, specifically in that fourth quarter when a time of possession comes in. It's not been Nebraska's defense on the field trying to stop a no-mercy drive. It's been the offense that's just sledgehammered away. I think mentally, last year's game, while crushing and hurtful for Nebraska, it wasn't a blowout. And it wasn't a blowout for the first time in a while. Maybe since the
Wisconsin game.
Yeah, maybe for the first time since Nebraska and Wisconsin opened up Big Ten play that second year in the Big Ten, the ugly uniform game, right? That was a close game. That was a 3-point ball game or a 6-point game. But the rest of them have been double-digit beatings. So You have a lot of kids on this team this year that were in that four-quarter game against Wisconsin, went toe-to-toe. No, it's a different team. But from a mindset, you win against them, and you were right there. If you make the play on the offensive line and you get the first down.
Do you think Nebraska's ready to go toe-to-toe with them?
I think Nebraska mentally is ready. Physically, you brought up the question, can you sledgehammer away for four quarters? And I don't know that. I can't say, yeah, I'm good with that because of the injury situation. I think if you have your guys that your normal starting five on the offensive line, yeah, I think they'll be okay. I think the backups have done a great job. But I think there's too big a gap between Nebraska's twos and threes versus Wisconsin's ones on the defensive versus the offensive line. Get me out of today and give me another couple, 3 days for dudes to rest up, i.e. Gates, and then we can talk here in a week.
And then today, you know what else I want to see against Purdue? Because we talked about this a little bit yesterday, but the defense against Indiana was noticeably, visibly, definitely better.
Swag.
Definitely better than the defense that we saw before that. They took that bye week and got better. Like, and that was obvious. That's not just a coach speak thing. Like, oh, I got better the bye. No. You saw more heat-seeking missile type tackles. You know what I'm saying? You saw Nate Gary diagnosing stuff and just getting shot out of a cannon.
He looked phenomenal.
Mm-hmm. You saw the same thing because there's so many Williams. Aaron Williams. Sorry.
Aaron Williams is phenomenal too.
You saw from Aaron Williams. You saw Banderas, I thought, had one of his better games where he's blowing stuff up. So I saw a defense. If they can continue on that trajectory, because I think before that Indiana game, you saw signs of an okay defense. Not a bad defense. Not a good defense, but an okay defense.
No, they looked different. They looked different. Yeah.
They absolutely looked different. They looked like they got it. They looked studied. They looked physical. So I want to see that carry over today. I know it's Purdue. I know it's kind of boring. I know they're going to chuck it maybe 50, 60 times a game just because that's the only thing they can do. Maybe they'll run it a little bit more. Brandon Vogel says that they probably should according to their numbers, but they haven't. Now that Hazel's out of the picture, maybe they will. I don't know. But you're better than Purdue. And I just want to see that carry over today. I want to see that carry over. I want to see a crisp, aggressive, fast defense. That's what you saw against Indiana last week. And it's a defense that's disruptive. So they're, you know what, they're not just playing their position, they're making plays. You know what I mean? That's not they're not just the shooting guard that's just sort of camping out and maybe takes seven shots a game. No. They're calling for the ball, they're slashing to the hole, they're coming off screens. Right. These guys are, I mean, come on now. That was a solid effort. Not perfect. I wouldn't even say elite, but a good to really good defense was shown last week. So you know it's in there for those guys.
Well, and
last, got to see that carry forward against a team that you could obviously lose focus on.
Absolutely. And lastly, one little note to make too with Nebraska's defense as they continue to get better and improve and look the part. Think about how they adjusted when it was Wildcat time against Indiana. And I don't think Purdue will do this, but moving forward with Braxton, I almost called him Braxton Miller, JT Barrett. Let's go 0 for 2 on the name. When we look at Barrett and what he does in the run game, that's kind of been the security blanket and the unstoppable part of the Ohio State offense. Well, Nebraska didn't handle the mobile quarterback part of Indiana's game real well, and then the next couple series handled it extremely well. They made the adjustment, and they didn't panic with it. And they handled it. So it's moving forward, too. That's something that you can kind of put in your back pocket for 2 weeks from now when Ohio State and Nebraska touch gloves. Mark Kranak at Mark Skurs on Twitter. TJ Henning at TJ_Henning. And Chris Schmidt here on a Saturday Hail Varsity Radio edition at Schmidt_Radio. Maybe you're going to tailgate a little bit later. Maybe you're thinking about a little golf this morning. Still beautiful weather. Still fall. Like weather for you and membership benefits and membership pricing for you to explore this fall and beyond with Wilderness Ridge. We invite you to take a look, wildernessridgegolf.com, and take some time. Get caught up with Chris Thompson, Director of Golf, PGA Professional. Also, our dear friend Mike Schuhart, Director of Instruction. And no time like right now, a few gorgeous days left in the fall to get out and enjoy the weather, enjoy the scenery, and enjoy just tremendous golf at Wilderness Ridge. 402-434-5106, wildernessridgegolf.com. HailVarsity.com. Brandon Vogel is coming up in less than an hour of HailVarsity.com and magazine. Gary Sharp, the Iron Horse, about an hour from now in our conversation with Purdue play-by-play man Tim Newton. Up next, Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine on ESPN 1480 in the ESPN 1480 app.
With Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery, with Chris Schmidt and Mark Kranach.
We welcome in the play-by-play voice of the Boilermakers, Tim Newton, with us here to get Hour 2 kicked off on Hail Varsity Radio. Tim, thanks for a few minutes. How are you today?
I'm doing just fine. How are things out in Nebraska?
You know what? It's 70, it's sunny, it's not quite fall-like Big Ten weather, but you'll take some... Well, some spring-like conditions, I would think, you know, plenty of time for snow and rain and November
winter,
football, right?
Yeah, winter will be here soon enough. We're okay with this right now.
Well, and I'm excited to have Purdue come to town and anxious to spend a few minutes with you, Tim, so thanks for taking the time. It's been a tough weekend and into this week for interim coach Parker. Coach Hazel no longer with Purdue. And let's spend a couple minutes here, Tim, on Darryl Hazel and why you thought he was unable to get it done at Purdue. It's been a tough job for a lot of folks not named Joe Tiller. What are your thoughts on the Hazel era?
Well, I think if you look back on the Darryl Hazel era, which ended after 3.5 years, it was really stated at the press conference and probably pretty well put that this is a personnel business. And not just the personnel that's roaming the sideline, but the personnel you've got on the field. And the bottom line is that during his tenure, Darryl was not able to attract enough recruiting talent to get this program where it needs to be, which is certainly not in the bottom of the Big Ten. They had a couple of recruiting classes that were ranked last in the conference and among the worst in the country. And there's some talent here, but there's not enough talent here. There's not enough depth here. And as we've seen this year, when a couple of injuries have popped up, when they've got to go to the seconds and the thirds, bad things happen. And that's part of it. I think also that the thing that has pulled Purdue back a little bit or held it back is that it really doesn't seem to have an identity right now. You mentioned Joe Tiller, and when Joe was here, the phrase everybody used was basketball on grass, and it was basically throwing the ball around the field until you got tired, and then you throw some more. I'm not sure right now what you would say Purdue's identity is on either side of the ball, and I think before they can really build their recruiting, they've got to decide what they're going to be and what they're going to do and then try to recruit to that kind of a system.
Are you surprised Darryl didn't make it to the end of the season?
You know, that's a good question. Yes and no. We had heard a lot of rumblings after the 50-7 loss to Maryland that something might be happening if they had lost the game at Illinois the following week. And then they came up with a really emotional overtime win, and you thought, well, that's going to buy them some time. And I think even at that point, and Mike Bobinski, the new athletic director, talked about it in his press conference Sunday. I don't think he had decided fully until the first half of the game last week when Iowa just came in here and rolled over Purdue. It was 35-7 at halftime. The final was 49-35, but the final was nowhere near indicative of how dominating Iowa's performance was. And I think rather than go through the week by week, is he going to go, is he not going to go? Mike decided that he would try to salvage what he could out of this season, maybe with a fresh start, with an interim coach, with Jared Parker will fill that role. But I think he also wanted to send the message out there that it's not going to be the status quo, it's not going to be business as usual at Purdue, and the Boilermakers are ready to turn the page and go to the next chapter. So you're always surprised, and I've never been involved in one of these mid-season terminations. And it's been a very odd week to the point of on the radio network we're trying to decide, okay, what do we call our coaches show now?
Right.
Because we can't call it the Darryl Hazel show anymore. Just little things like that you kind of take for granted, but you've got to make some changes on the fly. And I do think there will be a little bit of a difference. Jared Parker was asked today at the press conference what differences he'll make, and he didn't say, you know, you're not going to be able to change a whole lot schematically in the middle of the season. And Purdue has already had its bye week, so they can't regroup that way. but he can make little changes. And just one of the subtle changes he's going to make, in the past when they've flown to Big Ten games or any game, any out-of-town games, they've worn suit and tie on the road. Well, now they're going to go in sweats. They're just going to try to do things a little bit different to see if maybe a different look, a different voice, a different attitude might spur something and help them salvage what's left of the season.
What else can you tell us about Jared, and do you think he'll be given a chance to be given the, not just the interim label, but has a chance to be the head coach long term?
I think unless he goes 5-1 or 6-0 down the line, probably not. Jared's a great guy, high energy guy. He's a graduate of Kentucky, and he's had coaching stops at UT Martin and at Marshall before he came to Purdue. At Purdue, he's been the tight ends coach, and he's been the receivers coach, and he's also been the recruiting coordinator. So he's helped guide, you know, some of the good talent we've gotten here in West Lafayette has been directly resulting from Jared's efforts. I would just be surprised, because the firing happened at midseason, I think it almost commits you to say, you know what, we've made this change in the middle of the year. Now we need to make a big splash when we make our hire. And again, now if he goes, if he runs the table the rest of the way and goes 9-3, sure, he certainly would get a look. That's probably not going to happen. And I would think that Mike Bobinski is probably going to be looking to see around there who's had experience, who is going to get the fan base here in West Lafayette and in Indiana and around the country of Purdue fans excited about football again.
Tim Newton, play-by-play man of the Boilermakers, with us here on Hail Varsity Radio. The coaching carousel kind of heats up. You know, you have the hot seat to start the year. You have your midseason. LSU's made a move. Purdue's made a move. Then there's the list of names, wants versus reality. What's a realistic splash? Is Les Miles a name I've seen out there, something that could happen? What's the bank account look like for Purdue football? Also, Bo Pelini, being familiar with the Big Ten, has been mentioned. You have a guy like Brock Speck. He's a former Purdue guy at Illinois State. You know, you have a ton of guys out there. You have jobs, you have coaches, and you have movement that will happen. What can Purdue do when it comes to landing a big name?
I think that's a question a lot of Boilermaker fans are waiting to see. And we've had assurances here from the president of the university, from the board of trustees, that they are going to make the commitment to spend what they need to become competitive. I think they've started to do that. They're in the midst right now of finishing, and it'll be done in time for next season, a $65 million football performance complex, which I know a lot of other schools in the Big Ten have, but it's one of those situations where you do have to keep up somewhat with the Joneses in this day and age. Daryl Hazel is making $2 million a year, and that's more than Purdue has ever paid a football coach. I think they understand that to go to the next level, they're probably going to have to up that ante a little bit. Now, how big that bank account is, that remains to be seen. Yeah, we've heard all the rumors here. We've heard the Les Miles and Brock's back, and there are all sorts of speculation. Bo Pelini is a name that came up today, I think, around here for the first time. We don't have a track record on this new athletic director, because he was just hired about a month and a half ago. And I can tell you that his hiring was about as secret as anything I've ever been around. We didn't find out here in Lafayette who it was until 20 minutes before the press conference. So they did a pretty good job of buttoning that search up, and I have a feeling that this football coaching search is going to be run the same way.
What does Purdue need to be offensively? Do you like what Tiller did, kind of a pre-Oregon type, this is your niche, this is how you gash teams? You need something offensive and creative, and you kind of stated that earlier. Do you have to go something like that in a guy that I know he's got a lot of, you know, do not touch signs attached to him, but Art Briles and his offense, where do you think they need to go philosophically with the hire offensively? I mean, is it going to be a spread guy? Is it going to be option? Do you do air raid? I mean, what do you think fits?
If you look back at the history of Purdue football, and they've got a moniker here that we call ourselves the cradle of quarterbacks. And if you look back at when Purdue's been successful, you got Bob Greasy, Len Dawson, Mark Herman, Jim Everett, Drew Brees, Kyle Orton. All those guys were NFL players. And when Purdue has had success, It's had Sunday players at the quarterback position, and it's thrown the ball all over the field. And I really believe, and I think this is true of not only any sports organization, but any business organization. When you're struggling, what do you tend to do? You tend to go back to your roots. And the roots here at Purdue are to throw the football and to find a guy that can sling it around the field 50 or 60 times a game and have success. When Darryl came in, and he came from Ohio State, and he came from Kent State, where he had an outstanding running back. In his first year here, they tried to go a lot of power offense, and it just didn't fly. You didn't have the personnel to do that. We're not a two tight end set here. That's just not the style that's going to happen. So I do think they've got to get offensively. They've got to get somebody who's going to throw the ball around. Get, again, an exciting brand of football. Purdue fans want to win, but they also want to be entertained. And I think they have not been entertained the last few years. The other thing they've got to do is they've got to get respectable on defense. And you all know, whether you're in the Big 12, Big 10, whatever conference you're in, if you can't stop the run, you can't win.
Right.
And right now, Purdue is, I think, fourth from the bottom in the NCAA in rushing defense. And until that problem gets fixed, it really doesn't matter what you do offensively. You're going to have a hard time competing because you just can't outscore people week after week.
So as the Boilermakers make their way to Lincoln on Saturday, who are some playmakers on the team that Husker fans should keep an eye out for?
Well, it's ironic. As I just talked about, all the great things that they need to do passing the football, probably the best group on the football team right now is the running backs. They've got some real legitimate talent at running back. Markell Jones, who's been hurt this year. He hurt his shoulder early on, and he really hasn't been 100% since the first game. But I think he's got big-time talent. They had a true freshman, Brian Langford Johnson, who ran for more than 125 yards against Illinois. And then the guy that I think Nebraska fans will probably see a lot of on Saturday is a guy named Richie Worship. He's a redshirt freshman out of Cleveland. They list him at 245, and then I think he puts the other foot on the scale. He's certainly over 250. I don't know how much, but he is a powerful running back. And we've seen in a couple of games this year, teams do not want to try to tackle him as strongly in the fourth quarter as they did in the first quarter. The other guy offensively, I think D'Angelo Yancey, has had a decent season at receiver. Dominique Young, who had been having a great year, was hurt for the season, and he's out for the season after the Illinois game. And I haven't even talked about David Blau, the quarterback. Statistically, he's having a great season. I mean, you look, I think he's leading the Big Ten in total offense, and he's up there in passing yards. But if you watching him play week after week, I think I'd grade his performance maybe somewhere in a C-plus to B-minus range. He's missed a lot of guys that he could have had even bigger days with, and he has had a hard problem throwing interceptions. Mm-hmm. You know, Purdue's among the worst teams in the country in turnover margin. Defensively, the two guys that you can keep an eye on, first of all, to see if they're playing on Saturday, are Juwan Bentley, the middle linebacker, and then defensive tackle Jake Replogle. Both of those guys missed last week's game with Iowa because of an injury. And I do know that one thing we found out from Coach Parker today, unlike Daryl Hazel, he is not going to divulge injury information throughout the week. So we may find out Saturday at the same time everybody else does who's going to play this week.
Purdue play-by-play man Tim Newton with us, Hail Varsity Radio. Tim, about 90 seconds here. Ross Ells, a familiar name to Nebraska fans. He's been the DC at Purdue this season. What's he had to work with this year?
Well, he's had to work with a very inexperienced secondary, and I think that's been a challenge, although, again, the passing yards haven't been that high against Purdue because teams have been able to run. But, again, I think the lack of depth. We saw last week when Replogle didn't play, they had to bring a guy in at defensive tackle that hasn't played all season. And there just isn't the same amount of depth that I'm sure he was playing with at Nebraska and that he would like to have here. They've run a different scheme this year. They've taken most of the time. They're going to play a nickel package, so you'll see two linebackers and five DBs on the field most of the time. But the biggest problem right now with this defense is it's got to find a way to set the edge and stop the run on somebody this year.
About 30 seconds here, Tim. Your thoughts on Nebraska? They're dinged. They're beat up.
They're still Nebraska. I watched a little bit. I watched actually quite a bit of the Nebraska-Indiana game, and it seems like a team that can find a way to win. And I'm sure that those 90,000-plus people in the stands on Saturday aren't going to hurt the cause any. We're looking forward to a great atmosphere.
Be great atmosphere. What was your reaction to last year's win?
Well, if you turn the ball over for us again five times, we'd really, really appreciate that. That was awfully hospitable of you.
There you go.
We were shocked.
Tim Newton. Tim, have a great call. Pleasure to speak with you. We'll do this again, and thanks for a few minutes today.
Husker fans are the nicest in the Big Ten. We look forward to talking to them this week.
Well, enjoy yourself. Thanks for your time. Appreciate
Thank you.
It.
Uh-huh.
Welcome back to the show. Here are Chris Schmidt and Mark Kranach.
0.2. Fat, drunk, and stupid is no way to go through life, son.
Agreed. Welcome back to it. Saturday edition, Hail Varsity Radio. Hail Varsity Magazine, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, Mark Kranach, TJ Henning. Safe driving demands your full attention. One of every three traffic fatalities in Nebraska, alcohol-related. Many of those drivers involved buzzed while driving. Remember, you drink, you drive, you lose. A message from the Nebraska Office of Highway Safety. I'm going to just soak in some Zeppelin this morning.
Nothing wrong with that.
No.
Reminds me of the dorm rooms on vinyl.
What?
Incense.
Well, right. You were the incense guy down the hall?
Dryer sheets? I'm kidding. Kidding. Not admitting to that.
Is that mole hair? Yeah, it blocks the smell. Stick it under the door. Wrong
answer.
We're just
doing laundry in here. Just doing laundry, even though there's no washer and dryer.
Oh, you know what? We're going to get off of football for 2 seconds. We were on the third floor, right? Fourth and sixth. And this is the do not try this at home speech, okay?
Were you able?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, me too.
Uh-huh. Anywho, yeah, be the broadcasting kid that was stuck with all the engineer kids and go to them and say, yeah, I'm having problem with my math 101, and they just look at you and shake their head.
Yeah.
Anywho, there was some dude on our floor, and at Able, you have the kind of the end suites, right, for lack of a better term, and some of those were a little bigger because they crammed three dudes in.
Mm-hmm.
And the middle tenant, let's just say he was had a green thumb, right?
Okay.
And and this happened, and this is 100 years ago, but the police were going to search his joint, right? No pun intended. Sorry.
Yeah, that was a pun.
And he bedsheeted his way. From he opened the doors and he bedsheeted like his stuff to safety so he didn't get busted with possession. This is like the fourth floor, so it wasn't the sixth or the eighth, but you get my point. He went old school 20s movie, Escape from Alcatraz, where he tied a bunch of bedsheets together.
Good for him. Good for him. That is great.
Sorry, I mean, I'm not a great storyteller, but that still sticks with me to this day. The guy had, you know, Pink Floyd blacklight posters, pet iguana.
All the signs were there.
He was a really good dude that was just chill, you know? I mean, he was Spicoli.
He had the hemp anklet.
He might have had that. And the guy never looked like he showered. And I'm like, why are all these hot gals going to his room? Ding, ding.
Oh, my goodness.
You were the incense guy, huh?
No, not me.
Your roommate.
Other people.
That's where I was. People. That's where I was last weekend. I was in South Dakota, Minnesota border. And my college roommate, now my main college roommate that I was in the dorms with, lived with us in a house. This other guy, Matt, that I was at his wedding, we did the apartment slash house thing with a bunch of people once we got off campus. And it was, you'll remember moments of tension where you can't watch or follow a Nebraska game and Wi-Fi non-existent in this little southwest town of Minnesota. And so you get the radio. And, you know, you go in to do pictures and you're up 17-0. And again, I don't cheer, but I understand that you're ranked in the top 10 and you're trying to get to 6-0. And it would suck to drop one to Indiana. All due respect to Indiana. So you're wanting to follow along. You're wanting a chance to see what's going on. And then by the time everything got done, you're in the limo, and then we find our way to the Up the Crick bar. And as you walk in and order a beer, there goes Tommy to Stanley, and you're like, this is all good. By the time your beer's done, because you got to get back in the limo, Indiana just scored, and then it's chaos because you're trying to find that right patch of highway or interstate that will get the radio broadcast back in. How does this thing finish? I'm the one guy still stuck in the limo waiting for that final clock to tick down to triple zeros.
Mm-hmm.
And I held up the wedding party, and I was the a-hole.
Well, that's all right. It's not your fault that they decided to get married on that game day, right? That's your fault?
No, it's not. No, it's not. And I was actually in a pretty cooperative mood, grand scheme of things. But you're right. We've had this talk a lot about fall weddings.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, I mean, just think of all the days that exist. There are 13 Saturdays out of 365 days in a year.
Yeah.
You have 352 other options, and you're going to choose one of those.
And I can't.
That's on you.
I can't.
If you do that.
Go innocent here. I mean, I got married during the fall, but it was a bye week.
Yeah, exactly. And it's always.
I mean, you were in my wedding. I mean,
our true friends won't care. They'll be there anyways for us.
Their wives might be.
Our true friends will not care about the Nebraska game.
Now, have you ever had that intervention? Have you had to pull that? Have you had to sit down with your boy and say, bro, I love you. I'll be there for you. But it's Nebraska, Ohio State. What the hell are you on? Are you that guy that escaped from his fourth floor dorm room tying sheets together?
Look, man, no, that was not me.
I'm saying your friend. You had that intervention talk with him about those 13 Saturdays during the fall.
But see, by that point, they're too far gone. You can't even talk to them. You know what I mean? You're just like, if you have to have that talk, there's something.
Hand them over and tell her to put them in the purse. It's over.
You just shake your head. You go to the wedding. You make sure your phone is right and ready to watch the game on the phone.
All right. Well, we'll be right. Next hour, Brandon Vogel, Gary Sharp. Hail Varsity Radio continues.
The Hail Varsity Radio Saturday Morning Show, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Strap yourselves in. Here are your hosts, Chris Schmidt.
Y'all don't even know he was a virgin until he's 28, and now, roll tide.
And Mark Kranach.
Time has come for someone to put his foot down. And that foot is me.
Back with you, Hour 2, Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, Mark Kranach, TJ Henning, hope you're well this Saturday, getting ready for Nebraska-Purdue. Gary Sharp on the way. We welcome in tremendous writer with Hail Varsity, and he'll tell us more about the new website for Hail Varsity. We'll dive into his write-up stats six-pack with Nebraska-Purdue. We welcome in Brandon Vogel back to Hail Varsity at Brandon L. Vogel on Twitter. Vogues, how are we doing today?
I'm doing pretty well. How are you guys?
Good, man. And there's some excitement. It's going to be a gorgeous Saturday in Lincoln. And, you're just trucking towards November, and you know how November shifts weather-wise, but one more rodeo, so to say, with sunshine and 75 and nice kickoff. 2:30 time on national television for Nebraska-Purdue. And what a difference a year makes. That's been a theme this week, not only kickoff time, but just profile. And you know what? Let's go back to Indiana for a second here. And if you were to give me a grade on Nebraska's performance, I mean, you get an A for winning, obviously, but if you were to give me a grade, if you look at offense, defense, special teams, what grade would Professor Vogues hand out after that win in Bloomington?
Let's see. Offensively, you're probably in the C-plus range, I think. I was talking to Danny Langsdorf after the game. It was really actually after, like, he'd done all the interviews. We're just kind of talking about how the game went. And it was apparent. It was a play-calling challenge for him. just giving some of the injuries they had coming in, some of the injuries that happened during the game, you know, it was kind of like, okay, what can we rely on and what's going to work for us reliably here? That part was tough to find. So that part of it was about average. Defense, I thought, was probably closer to an A- or so. You know, we can talk about the tackling in that game, but they had to make a lot of plays consistently and a lot of the time, and they did it. I thought they played really well defensively. Special teams, you're probably back down somewhere around C-, if not a little bit worse. You know, getting a punt blocked is never a good thing. Net punting's in bad shape right now. So overall, you probably come away somewhere around in the B- range, I'd say, for the team as a whole.
Brandon Vogel with us, Hail Varsity Radio. You know, I'm glad you brought up the defense. My eyes told me that was one of Nebraska's better defensive performances since Riley's been here. And I just saw more guys sort of having those tackles of the heat-seeking variety, right? Especially Nate Gary, a little bit with Aaron Williams, a little bit with Josh Banderas, where those guys were seeing the play develop, and they were there before it could, and they were making the tackle. When you dove into the stats and all that, did it confirm, I guess, what our eyes saw?
Yeah, it absolutely did. You know, you started to get into the second half, and just watching the game, man, it feels like Nebraska's making a lot of solo tackles. You know, those Gary plays stick out, the one where he comes in like a lightning bolt and basically stops the middle screen behind the line of scrimmage. That's uncommon to see, and not just because he was there, but because he was sort of accelerating through that tackle when he made it. Last week's game defensively for Nebraska kind of felt like a classic playoff pitcher's duel, where, you know, you got one pitcher over there making all the throws, hitting all of his spots, and then it becomes up to the other guy to do it. And that's what Nebraska did. It wasn't a flashy defensive performance. Indiana was doing what it wanted to do, get its athletes in space, and make guys tackle. And Nebraska made probably 90-95% of the tackles that it needed to make. You know, you start to look at, you miss another 3, 4, 5 of those. Who knows what they turn into, because that's the thing with the solo tackle. There's nobody else there most of the time to help you out. So it was a very sort of high wire act, I thought, and Nebraska handled it really well.
Brandon, so a quick follow to that, and I'm looking ahead here, but you look at the two behemoths on the schedule coming up, Wisconsin and Ohio State. Based off of that, based off of how Nebraska performed against Indiana, is it crazy to think, that might actually serve Nebraska well against a team like Ohio State, maybe more so than even against Wisconsin? And I guess translation, what I'm saying is that Ohio State game doesn't seem as scary if Nebraska can take that on the road to Columbus.
I would still keep it in the scary category, because I think part of that too, so Nebraska made all the solo tackles, et cetera, et cetera. But part of that too is if they are in those situations as often against Ohio State, with the level of athlete Ohio State has, you start to miss those 5, 6, 7 more that I was talking about with Indiana. Cause I did kind of approach it from that view watching that game too. I'm like, this is really sound for Indiana offensively. If they have a little bit better player, you know, some of these things probably turn into a little bit longer games. That's the danger you run into with Ohio State. That said, you know, who knows how that last week's defensive game was perceived in the locker room. I get the sense they were pretty happy with how they played for the most part. So you know, there's always the confidence part of it too, but you're definitely facing a different caliber of sort of receiver and running back on those bubble screens and everything else.
Brandon Vogel with us, HailVarsity.com and magazine at Brandon L. Vogel on Twitter. Vogues, let's talk a little bit about your stats six-pack. You posted that story today or yesterday, but let's get into it today. And from a running standpoint, Nebraska, you anticipate a game plan where Nebraska will have a number of rush attempts. Let's talk quality, not just the quantity. How do you feel about Nebraska's running game going into today? We know about Purdue, where they rank and what they don't do well, that stop on the run. That said, Purdue did okay a year ago, stopping the run against Nebraska. And you have touched on the health of Nebraska. What type of result do you anticipate from maybe a yards per carry? What needs to happen?
Yeah, I think this is really a game for Nebraska's running backs. And that's never totally true. Obviously, you need the offensive line, et cetera. But with some of the injuries up there, it's going to be a game where Newbie, maybe Igbo, depending on how much he can go, and anyone else who's getting those carries, is probably going to have to earn a little bit extra. And that Purdue is the team to do that against. Last week, Iowa came out without Replago in there. They were just kind of like, well, we're just going to run right at them. Did. Purdue's given up over 7 yards a carry. I would think under normal circumstances, Nebraska could be close to that with questions on the offensive line and things like that up front. Maybe even 6.8, something like, I mean, that's still really high, guys. But something like that, that's kind of the range I expect Nebraska to be in. So if they're up over 6.5 yards a carry, maybe at halftime, something like that, you can feel pretty good, I think, that Nebraska's being able to move the ball the way they want to be able to move it.
So hold on 1 second. So you're telling me that everybody who runs against Purdue averages what Mike Rozier averaged?
Every Big Ten team has so far. That's their average in three conference games. And you know, Purdue's offense does have some passing yardage numbers, but in everything else, sort of like quarterback or passer rating, yards per completion, yards per attempt, completion percentage, they're down near the bottom of the Big Ten. They throw it, I guess, because they think it's their best bet. I question that strategy a little bit. I like some of their running backs. So we'll see. That's one of those things that's interesting about this from the coaching change perspective is it's a little bit of a wild card. You know, all of these past tendencies for Purdue might be out the window. Not totally, because, you know, teams are what they are, but a little bit. So could make this one closer, I think, than people are expecting it, at least early.
Brandon Vogel with us, Hail Varsity Radio. It's so funny, man. On the stats six-pack that you posted, normally very measured, analytical on an article like that, but I'm going to quote you real quick. I was initially a little surprised by Daryl Hazel's firing with Purdue at 3-3, but after taking a closer look at their stats, it all makes sense now. So, I mean, you've been doing these kinds of breakdowns for a while. Have you seen worse numbers? I mean, these seem like bottom of the barrel, really bad numbers compared to maybe any opponent Nebraska's faced the past couple years.
Yeah, and you know, the only thing that comes close is sort of previous Purdue teams. Maybe, you know, one of those Illinois squads from 2 or 3 years ago. And it's significantly different than that. And you know, with a couple of Purdue's early games, with some of the wins that they got, I was kind of like, okay, well, Purdue's maybe 5% better than I thought they would be this year. And I didn't think that was going to be enough to save Daryl Hazel's job by any means, but I thought it would get him a little bit further into things than six games. But you start to pull some of those things out of there, and you're like, yeah, they're really not doing that many things very well at all. Either offensively or defensively. You know, Sagarin always ranks, his computer rankings put FCS teams in the mix. I think Purdue's behind 11, 14, something like that, FCS teams, actually, way behind some of them, not far behind Youngstown State, incidentally.
Let's go there, and thank you. Let's go there, Brandon Vogel. Bo Pelini in Purdue. When you heard the name, and when you read the report, you did what? Well, you know, give me a look-see into your reaction earlier this week. You said, huh? What'd you do?
Probably
did you scowl?
I did not LOL, because I was kind of like, well, you know, I can see it. Bo won a lot of games in the Big Ten. If Purdue were to land him, that's at least a guy who with proven Power 5 experience, which is something I think is going to be tough for them to get. Even you start looking at some of the up-and-coming coaches, you know, guys like Willie Taggart or, heck, you can throw Scott Frost in the mix. A guy like Scott Frost, he's not leaving Central Florida to go to Purdue, no. I don't think. But I do think that sort of let's do something different, whether – and this doesn't happen very often defensively. So really you're looking for the Joe Tiller route where you're getting some sort of interesting, appealing curveball of an offensive scheme. I think that's something that Purdue probably has to do because lining up, playing sort of Bo Pelini brand of football, what we saw, it didn't work well enough to keep the job at Nebraska. You tried to do it at Purdue where you're just going to sort of out-tough people and out-recruit people because that's what you really have to do to play that style. That's a really tough challenge. So I would be really surprised if that came to pass, but I guess I could see why his name was floated.
Brandon Vogel with us, Hail Varsity Radio. So let's look around the Big Ten a little bit. You have Wisconsin, Ohio State, Michigan that have sort of separated themselves. Nebraska is sort of wait and see on how Nebraska does against those types of teams. I'm not so convinced, though, after watching the last 2 weeks. I understand that they're supremely talented, but I'm not so sold on Ohio State. I'm probably more sold on Michigan. Where do you sit on that after watching these teams?
Michigan's been a lot more steady at this point. They've got defensive playmakers, and they're just gonna make it tough on anybody they face to move the ball on them. So they're sort of that classic football mode where it's buckle your chin strap and get ready for 60 minutes of pounding. And that's less volatile, I guess, than what Ohio State's doing, particularly a really young Ohio State team. I was surprised. I mean, I like Wisconsin a ton. I think they've got a good team. I've been really impressed with them. I was surprised still at how that game went last week. So, it seemed like Ohio State surprised everybody by how little all of their attrition meant with how young this team was. But I think where you really start to see that sort of come into play is over, the second half of a season when it's 32 degrees and you're on the road in the Big Ten. That's when maybe and a freshman who isn't used to playing this many games at this high a level, that's when some of that stuff starts to show itself a little bit. I still think Ohio State's plenty good, but I think you're right. Like, just looking at them in direct comparison to Michigan, Michigan's probably a little bit of a safer bet.
Vogues, you're right. I mean, I think you look at the lines of scrimmage, and that's where Michigan is just – you're in awe of how physical and dominant they've been. Their quarterback doesn't do much for me. Their running back is good. I mean, he's Michigan good, but there's not a lot of sexiness to them, and that's all right because they just physically annihilate you. What impresses me, and Mark, I get what you're saying about Ohio State, maybe a little doubt because they haven't performed and dominated as much as Michigan has, but what kind of keeps me coming back to Ohio State and that wow factor I have with them is this team that is young, extremely young. I mean, they already went to Norman, and whatever you say about Oklahoma, they still did that early in the year. They didn't get complacent by being told how great they are once they won in Norman. They were in a tough ball game, and they responded in Indiana. And a week ago, we all thought Indiana was a pretty good team, and they proved us right. It was a tough win for Nebraska. And then to go from Indiana to Madison. And that place, I've not been there, but I've done enough of the unofficial poll questions that you don't go in there and win, and you don't go in there and win at night when you're that young. And for them to be down 10 at half, come back and win, and then hang on in overtime, and oh, by the way, get a stop when momentum's all on Wisconsin's side, it's first and goal inside the four in overtime. I'm blown away. I know they aren't perfect. They don't look as clean. But, man, they're impressive with some of their wins. And based on their age and experience level, That's why Ohio State, to me, just I still kind of shake my head in awe of what they've done with this youth, and they've proven all they've needed to prove to me.
Yeah, I totally agree. This week will be a good test too, because Ohio State legitimately, you know, 2-3 touchdowns better than Penn State in my mind. That's where the spread's at right now. So it seems like the public's kind of in the same mode. But you know, if you come out a little bit slow, all of a sudden, you know, Beaver Stadium becomes a pretty tough place to play. And then you're in the same spot. You got a young team on the road, difficult environment. So we'll see. I kind of expect Ohio State to come out and control that one early, which would be a further proof, I guess, for you and I's line of thinking, Schmitty, which is that this team's really good. And it's kind of the most impressive thing about it might be how good it's looked to this point.
Brandon Vogel, Hail Varsity Radio. All right, lastly, Brandon, before we let you go, let's look at the tailback position. And Terrell Newby's been, you know, he's been criticized most of his career, just because he hadn't really run with that physical, reckless abandon that you sort of expect out of that position. But the last 2 weeks, and maybe the entire season, we just didn't see a lot of him. He is sort of running like that now, and you got to kind of give him his due. Put it this way: Are you surprised? Because I can't think of a comparison that he's running against his nature, right? Like that's not him. That's not his style. But I'm shocked that he was able to learn that style and apply it, and run physically and hit guys and run through tackles, that sort of thing. I can't think of another comparison where you've, because you kind of are who you are, right?
Yeah.
But here's a guy. It's you know, that whole nature nurture thing. I mean, that was sort of nurtured into him. Is that surprising to you too?
Yeah, it is, and I think you're seeing, you know, he's kind of doing it to the level that he's comfortable at, which isn't totally like a 180 degree change from last year or the year before that. And I think that's one where maybe the timing just kind of worked out right for his career. So, you know, you get a new coaching staff straight at the midpoint of his career. Last year's is sort of an adjustment period. But having access to some new ideas, some new coaching and that whole side of things, can explain away a little bit of that, but most of it just has to come down to Terrell Newby said, okay, yes, I'm going to do this. I'm willing to do this. And even though it's sort of outside of my comfort zone, I'm going to trust these guys. I think that speaks well to both Terrell Newby and Nebraska staff.
Vogues, real quick, KLVarsity.com, facelift, message boards. It looks awesome. Tell me about it.
Yeah, well, I mean, you kind of hit the major points. You know, we decided to go all in on kind of developing this Husker community angle. So with that, we've implemented some forums, some message boards. We've got a free forum. If you want to go a little deeper than that, we've got premium forum with some premium stories now that are going online. So for the most part, it's just sort of expanded coverage, kind of bringing people more of what they've come to expect from us, both online and in print.
Vogues, awesome stuff. Can't wait to read your post-game column, Brandon Vogel, HailVarsity.com and magazine. Vogues, take care. We'll talk soon, bud.
All right, guys. Thanks.
Awesome stuff. Right. Good stuff from Brandon Vogel. Cranack, the Ohio State question, I totally get what you're saying with just the you look at all the great teams, the top three, the top four, the slip-up potential, right? That's kind of where you're at is, does Ohio State slip up anywhere? And are they beatable? I mean, Bama's invincible. They're, you know, Terminator. They look that good. Watch them fall today, right, as I praise them. But I get what you're saying, but I think it would have happened already to Ohio State if it was going to happen. I mean,
I don't know. See, yeah. Okay. I just, when you're watching
saying,
teams at that level.
I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just saying that, man, they've passed a lot of tests already. And
sure.
Based on their age, they should have, you know, falling down.
Sure. And it's relative, right? Like, yeah. I'm not saying Ohio State's a bad
team.
No, not
at all.
Right.
No.
But as you're looking for holes in those elite teams,
right,
I see more holes there than I do Michigan. Because Michigan, I'm
see,
I'm
I
like,
look at the quarterback, and push comes to shove, put my money on Barrett versus Michigan's quarterback.
Absolutely. But how the hell are you going to score on Michigan? How the hell are you going to get a first down on Michigan? They are still, we talked about this, I think, 3 weeks ago, 2 or 3 weeks ago, where Michigan's third down defense, something like 12% conversion rate.
No, I
that's you. Held steady. They're still at that. I mean, opponents are converting 12% of third downs. Those are ridiculous numbers, man. I mean, that is like unheard of. Usually 25 to 27% leads the country. These dudes are at 12%.
The only team Michigan's played is Colorado.
Fair, but these guys have suffocated. I mean, completely shut down, made teams look like Division II football teams.
Well, Rutgers couldn't win in Division II right now. So,
well, you're right. You're right, but that's held steady. Yeah. No matter who the opponent is, you're not getting first downs on those guys. You got Jabril Peppers. I mean,
Michigan
is more scary to me than Ohio State is right now.
Well, we'll get Sharpie's thoughts on this. Gary Sharp, the Iron Horse, is coming up. He's got a big Cub game tonight, as he's a giant Cubs fan. We'll get his thoughts on Nebraska as well, as Hail Varsity Radio continues, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Now it's time to get back to the Hail Varsity Radio Show with Chris Schmidt and Mark Kranak.
All right, that's it!
You two guys leave me no choice. No television for a week. What?
Back with you, Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, Mark Kranak, TJ Henning. Hope you're all right. Purdue week is here. Wisconsin week next week. Ohio State, you get the drill. Welcome in the Iron Horse. Proudly wearing that Cubs hat for his guys to take care of business. Gary Sharp with us. Sharpie, good morning. How are you?
Hey, good morning. Yeah, let's hope the W is raised in a couple of locales later this afternoon and tonight.
Are you prepared? Dear friend, Mike Schaefer, longtime Cleveland fan. I've known you for a long time, and I know you're a Cubs guy. Can you guys get along okay if the inevitable happens, and that's Cleveland-Chicago?
Oh, certainly. We can get along up until Tuesday, and then as long as the Cubs win the World Series, we're best buds. It's okay.
Okay, I had to get that out of the way first. Your thoughts on the Indiana win? Going to backtrack. I was in South Dakota and Minnesota last week, so I had to sweat that one out. But what do you think? Are you feeling okay as the season ramps up?
Well, Nebraska's 6-0, and that's the most important thing. Last week was a week where you had to gut it out, and the defense played one of the best games that the Blackshirts have played collectively in a long time, and you found a way to win the football game when you had guys that were going down and it messed up your chemistry on the offensive line and your quarterback wasn't at full strength. But at the end of the day, it just shows you another thing that Nebraska has eliminated some of those losing habits of last year. They still got a lot of work to do. I mean, there's nobody is questioning that. Even the guys that are playing or on the headsets know that. But at the end of the day, Nebraska got to 6-0, and everything that they want to achieve is still in front of them. And that's why you got to, you know, I know today is Purdue, and Purdue is Purdue, but you have to be a little bit careful today and then focusing on Purdue, because then things really change here at about 6 o'clock if Nebraska does business today. Because for the first time in a while, Nebraska is going to get a lot of national attention. And then everybody will be asking until you tee it up this time next week, are you for real? But today's an important game for Nebraska because of the injuries, and important for guys to realize that 7-0 is a lot funner than 6-0 is.
Gary Sharp with us, Hail Varsity Radio. All right, so let's not talk too much about Purdue because that's not a service to anybody. Fast forward to the two behemoths coming up on the schedule. I mean, what are the one, two, or three questions that just aren't answered right now because Nebraska hasn't faced that caliber of opponent? What are the one, two, or three things that you're still questioning about Nebraska to be able to compete with those two teams?
One would be the speed factor, especially the team that's playing in Columbus. The other would be Can Nebraska up front defensively get off blocks? Can they keep their linebackers clean against offensive lines like Wisconsin and Ohio State? And then we know that Nebraska has been able to run the football, especially in the fourth quarter, but at other times during the game when Nebraska has to run the football, can they run the football effectively? I think something also to watch, and it's really, you know, we enjoy what Nebraska does in the fourth quarter, and that stands by itself. 40% of your rushing yards are in the fourth quarter. You're outscoring your opposition like you are. You own it in terms of time of possession. You've had good starts to games in terms of your defense. They've only got up 8 points in six games. But what happens in the middle of the game for Nebraska? Why, throughout Mike Riley's tenure at Nebraska, is the only quarter that they've been outscored in is the second quarter? What goes on during the second quarter? And then in the third quarter, there's adjustments at halftime, but can Nebraska take off? So I think those are three that come to mind. I think there are others out there, but at least Nebraska has a foundation where while they're in the midst of the season and they are winning, they can work on those kind of things. But circle it all back, guys, and whether you want to give Purdue much credit today or not, the injury situation is a real bothersome for Nebraska because it changes your play caller and what weapons he has and what he can do, especially up front. So today, that's a big thing to watch. And count the number of snaps that individual guys get.
Gary, is today, I mean, you're going to go out and win and you have a game plan put together, but could you use today, and again, chemistry is such a great word to use because you're going to have some guys maybe playing that are not familiar. They've played those spots before, but as a unit, that's can you gel together? If you're Langsdorf, do you try and find some alternatives, some things you can hang your hat on if you are down to bare bones options? Will today be used as a way to experiment a bit while obviously the goal being to win the game?
Well, I think you have to keep in mind that healthy or not, teams have run for 400 and then 300 plus bills on Purdue in the last couple of Big Ten games. So you should be able to run the football. You also should not, and I know, injuries happen. There's a difference between being hurt and there's right. a difference between being injured. This is Nebraska. It is the next man up. You don't sit and go, oh, woe is me. And I don't think Langsdorf will do that. I think he'll stick to a plan. I think the best case scenario for Nebraska is they come out, they're efficient, they run the football, they run it with some success, they make it a quick game, they kind of shorten it a little bit, they put big points on the scoreboard, they get out of it relatively unscathed injury-wise, and they get a lot of backups, some playing time today when the game is still on the line. And I think that's important for the offensive line. You know, the door is open for playing time, and there's some guys that have not taken advantage of it for one reason or another, either be Jalen Barnett or Michael Decker or Zach Hannon, guys that are on scholarships. Here's your golden opportunity today, because do we really want to see Nick Gates play 65, 70
no.
snaps? Do we
no.
want to see David Neville play the same? I mean, we want to see some guys be able to get off their feet and avoid injury, because you got to have them when you go to Wisconsin. You got to have them when you go to Ohio State. They're not going to be back to 100%. But boy, you can't walk into those two venues with your two tackles that are about 75%.
Gary Sharp, Hail Varsity Radio with us. Gary, special teams, your boy Bruce Reed, I know you defend him all the time. You're a big fan. I'm just going to leave it there, man. I'm going to put that one on the tee for you. What is happening there?
Well, how many times in a season, and it's very rare, that Nebraska has two punts blocked. I mean, think about it. Nebraska got lucky last week because there's a difference. My math teacher, Mr. Hollowell, in seventh grade at St. Pius X in Urbandale, Iowa, told me there's a difference between 7 and 2. So you look at how that game played. Fortunately, it was just 2. But the punt team and the punt coverage team right now is a dumpster fire. And some of it is on the guy who has affectionately been dubbed Forfitty in terms of organization. I mean, you see a lot of confusion. You have to take timeouts, or you get called for too many men. That's confusion. You should be, when it gets to third down, you should be hollering up the punt unit. Everybody should be together on the sidelines that's not already on the field, so that when it becomes fourth down, you're out there. Now, the punt that was blocked, I don't believe that Bruce Reed has a play drawn up where it just says one guy blocked and 10 guys go downfield. And that's what happened on that. It looked like Sam Hahn was the only guy that was interested in block. So don't put that on Bruce Reed. But it's a collective. They've got to get better. It just also gives you an indication. Nebraska left their number one defense on the field for a couple of plays in the on the fourth down against Indiana because they were afraid of the fake. They didn't have confidence that they could put their punt coverage unit out there, and they would be able to sniff it out and stop it if Indiana ran a fake. You know, Des Moines personnel hasn't had the kind of opportunities to bust big returns. So there's a lot of things going on there. Thankfully, with special teams, there is week to week the number one constant in Nebraska football right now, and that's Drew Brown. Drew Brown is having a fantastic year, and Drew Brown is on about a two-year run where he's been really, really good. And if you look at after that safety, look at his kickoff, how far down he kicked it, and he pinned Indiana. So you've got him, but the rest of it right now is a dumpster fire that has to get fixed. When your head coach doesn't call you out by name but says, what good is there, when he's talking about that punt team and punt coverage team, you know you got issues. But that's got to get fixed, because what happens in big games, we see it every Saturday. One special teams breakdown, Katie bar the door, momentum shifts, and you give up a score, and all of a sudden you're scrambling to get back into the game.
Gary Sharp, a couple more minutes with us, Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine. Sharpie, your thoughts here as Wisconsin heads to Iowa, and can Iowa kind of turn it around, or is Wisconsin, doesn't matter, they're still in the midst of this mother of all schedules. They just seem to keep getting stronger. I know they haven't won all of the games, but they've been in all of them. Do they go win this rivalry game today on the road?
Well, you know, last year was a 10-6 game. These games have a tendency to be pretty tight. Even the really good Melvin Gordon senior team at Wisconsin, that was a tight game in Iowa City when Wisconsin was a big favorite. So I think it'll be a tight game. It'll all be about who's able to run the football. For Iowa, they're going against the 13th best rush defense in the country. And for Wisconsin, which was a little unsettling if you're a Nebraska fan, for the first time really all year, Wisconsin looked like what Wisconsin usually looks like running the football against Ohio State. They ran some jet sweeps. Corey Clement got loose. I think Wisconsin goes into Iowa City and wins today, guys. And then that really sets up a wild scene in Madison next week. But if Iowa wins, Wisconsin's on three losses. And all of a sudden, you're looking at an opportunity for Nebraska where you could end the Big Ten West. You could knock out a couple of teams here before you get to November 1. But keep an eye on Northwestern. Northwestern's schedule, outside of a trip to Columbus next week, is pretty manageable. So keep an eye on them. But I think Wisconsin wins today, and then it sets up what we all want, and that's the showdown in Madison next Saturday night.
Gary Sharp with us, Hail Varsity Radio. What do your eyes tell you? Does Nebraska match up better against Ohio State or against Wisconsin?
Wisconsin. I think speed will be a big, big factor in the Ohio State-Nebraska matchup. But I think in terms of philosophy and what Nebraska does well against Wisconsin's strengths or their weaknesses, I think Nebraska matches up a lot better there. But let's put an asterisk on it. And I you know, we're not whining. We're not the Toronto Blue Jays here. But injuries change how you react and what you're able to do. And I think you have to be, you have to watch and see how Nebraska gets through today's game and then kind of wait all next week before they go to Madison to find out who's playing and how available they are. I would like to see Nebraska next week to shut down any injury talk. I know Mike Riley is pretty open. If you ask him a question, he'll tell you. I think next week's a good week. Not to say anything about injuries because, you know, there's a couple of guys that are trying to get back that aren't for certain. Why not, when you show up to play the game next Saturday, they roll out of there. But today, the most important is, one, to get a victory, two, to get out of there with very much unscathed. I call it a program game. Go buy yourself a program, because hopefully there's a lot of guys that you've never seen before be on the field before the clock hits zero.
Love that. Gary Sharp with us, Hail Varsity. Sharpie, we'll see you later. Thanks for the time this morning. Always appreciate you.
Hey, thanks, guys.
Take care. Gary Sharp with us on Hail Varsity. Time before you get the tailgate fired up to go see your friends at Sauter Heyman. Go see Rick. 1 carat diamonds available. Well, they're there for you, and they're affordable for you at Sauter Heyman. $100 a month on select 1 carat diamonds. Go see your friends at Sauter Heyman. Rick and the gang, 12th and O downtown, South Point Pavilion here in Lincoln, or out west in Grand Island. Can log on, SauterHeyman.com. YourBestRing.com. Limited time offer with approved credit. And how about that lovely wife or girlfriend of yours? You bring her a 1 carat diamond, man, she'll be letting you watch football forever. That's what I'm thinking. Maybe. So one carat diamonds, $100 a month, only at Sauter Heyman. A quick timeout. We'll wind down a Saturday next.
Glad to have you back.
Yes, sir. You heard me right.
Here are the guys, Schmidt and Kranach.
Well, Hector, here's the game plan. You're going to bring us two absolute martinis. You know how I like them, straight up. And then precisely 7.5 minutes after that, you're going to bring us two more. Then two more after that, every 5 minutes until one of us passes out.
Excellent strategy, sir.
Well, pace yourself, strategy-wise. 2:30 kick. Gorgeous Saturday. I can't emphasize that enough. Kranach, are you a guy to kind of take days like today and just soak them in? Or are you a guy that's like, man, this may be one of the last few nice Saturdays out there? Because by the time Nebraska gets home, it's going to be, well, November.
Yeah, but there's global warming happening, so we're good.
You're fine.
It'll be warm again. Did you see what Louisville's doing today? It just came across on Twitter.
They're getting Patino a U-Haul.
That would be good. And Patino. They're wearing glow-in-the-dark shoes for their game, which will be played in the light.
One more time.
They're wearing glow-in-the-dark shoes. What the hell does that matter when they're playing in the light? You know what I'm saying? It's not like they're playing in a dark stadium. Glow-in-the-dark shoes. What the hell is the point of that? And they're making a thing about it. Innovation. That's edgy. Ooh, they're glow-in-the-dark. What are we, four? Are you playing this game in a darkened closet? What? It's so stupid. The uniform stuff's out of control. Maybe with Oregon being terrible, that'll start to calm down a little bit, but it doesn't appear that way. Glow-in-the-dark shoes when you're playing in daylight or under lights. What kind of sense does that make?
It's the way to sell stuff.
I mean, what? Yeah. But at what point would you ever need that?
I don't know. I'm not a big glow-in-the-dark guy. Are you coming down today?
Is it blackout football night?
It might be. Are you taking the little ones to the Purdue game?
No. No. Eyes can't unsee that.
Okay.
Because I love my children.
Carson's going with Joe Papa, mm-hmm. with my dad. Now, Carson's extremely thankful, and I'm happy, because the moments you get to spend with family going to Nebraska games is stuff you'll remember forever. But I kind of halfway want my kid to ask Grandpa, Grandpa, I love you, and it's fun, but, you know, you haven't gone back to Arizona. Why the hell didn't you take me to Oregon? What's this Purdue crap? I kind of want that question lobbed at Joe Papa after Joe Papa's third or fourth Jack Daniels.
Mm-hmm.
I want Carson to have that in the back of his pocket and go, this might be the right time now. I'll get an honest answer where he doesn't care.
Yeah, why not?
I mean,
I think you should, yeah. Plant that seed and see where that gets you.
Well,
and then if he does it, get him some glow-in-the-dark shoes.
Oh, he's probably looking them up right now on his iPod.
I just don't understand
what's going to happen. Listen, I don't want to hear about it, because you're not at the point right now where you've got your little ones beating you over the head with, hey, Daddy, I want this crap. I want that crap. I want this jersey. I want those pair of Nikes. I want all this junk. You're still safe.
Mm-hmm. No, so far so good on that.
You're extremely safe. But yeah. So you're getting rid of your Purdue tickets is what you're telling me.
Yeah. Yeah. I sold them to a father and daughter that live in Wisconsin that are making the trip down. Daughter's first ever game. She's like 13, 14.
Okay.
So that'll be good.
Okay.
You know,
that's nice of you. Did you hammer them? I mean, was it 40% markup, or did you?
No, it's face value.
Okay. That's nice. Kranach, I'm proud of you there.
Friendly Husker fan thing to do.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what's your routine today then? Are you throwing something on the grill? You're gonna do you're kind of a gourmet cook, you and Vogel. What are you throwing on the grill today to watch football?
Today's gonna be without a lot of pomp and circumstance.
No chili?
You know what I'm saying?
You're not gonna go chili?
You don't waste chili on Purdue.
Okay. How about are you and Laura gonna have a Boilermaker together?
Maybe. I'll tell you what though, right? You don't waste that stuff on Purdue, right? Like, because you save that for Wisconsin and Ohio State in case you have to eat your feelings.
I hear you. All right, I love
and
that.
Go, you know.
All right, there's Mark Crane at Chris Schmidt. Thanks so much to TJ Henning. We'll be back with you on Monday as Wisconsin Week is here. Take care. Thanks for your time.